Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Well, today I've worked so hard that I have to start late because I've worked hard on publishing my letter to humans about genetic editing, and it is now on the Bitcoin blockchain. It is a form of publication. I learned a lot of things. I realized that, wow, this form of publication, first, it can lead to a lot of copyright issues. Like, what if the company that I employed to make the inscription on the blockchain, Blanket says, Sound of Silence, Jeff. Well, restart your stream. Restart your browsers. We are live. What happens if someone else gets a copy of my text and publishes it on the blockchain before me? Those are problems. And also, I realize the importance of just how much care you have to put into this when you know it's forever. When you know that there will be no way to edit, there will be no way to delete it. It's on the blockchain as a transaction forever. I can tell you that I've never been so attentive and working on the details to correct last minute, because all of the other forms of publication, you can always edit out, clip out, change the file. There's always something you can do, but the blockchain is forever. And now I have my letter inscribed onto it. A rather long letter, but you can see in the blockchain that it's still text. You can copy paste this info into a notepad and it will show you the whole letter. I really like this, that it's really text form, and that is how I wanted it to be displayed. Now, I've given on my website a link to an easy-to-read version so that you don't have to copy-paste into a notepad. But there it is in my wallet, identified in my name. And I hope that in millions of years, the Bitcoin blockchain still exists and is carried forward by human beings, and people are ready to look back and say, hey, this guy knew what was about to happen. Before we get to read the whole letter, the week is exciting at Leather Apron Club. Leather Apron Club has released another video. Yesterday it was about Sam Harris. Today it is about Jordan Peterson. Look at where Jordan Peterson stands in terms of overrepresentation of Jewish guests. 1,064% overrepresented. He has therefore more overrepresentation of Jews than Joe Rogan, but less than Lex Fridman and Sam Harris.
You can even put it that way. This means that Peterson still overrepresents Jewish individuals at a rate of 1,064%. I cannot stress enough that Jewish people represent an extremely small minority group, which is why these numbers are so astounding. But there's a problem, even with this 1,000.
All right, and so he goes on to make an argument that, hey, we could even take the Jewish population proportions of Canada, since Jordan Peterson has a Canadian podcast. And he shows if you take the Jewish population in Canada, it's even worse. It puts him above Sam Harris because there happens to be less Jews in Canada than in the US. So extremely interesting, and it's going to be every day. I think at the end of this video, he indicates who he wants to talk about next. What is it?
Open to free speech and free thought. If you ever want to have me on to discuss these ideas, I am more the world's most popular left-wing podcast, Pod Save America.
Oh, he's going to examine more left-wing podcasts now. So it's going to be Pod Save America to determine, okay, you have these more independent thinker type of podcast that he's looked into. Now let's go to the true left. What do they have in terms of Jewish overrepresentations? It's going to be interesting. So, I just published my letter to humans on gene editing. This is the most important thing I may ever say. If humanity continues down the line of genetically modifying children, we are headed toward complete annihilation. I published it on the BTC blockchain with a request to the BTC community to carry this letter millions of years into the future so that my predictions can be verified then. The most important thing I must tell you is that the future is set only by the present and the past, and that you are therefore capable of changing the course of evolution going forward. If it is the case that humans can choose so much of their own attributes, then they can certainly choose to forego this capricious opportunity to determine their descendants' future. We can and must choose not to choose. We must do so together. This decision must not be made out of carelessness for the outcome of mankind's evolution, but out of a recognition that the mechanisms of nature are better guides than the minds of men in reaching our desired outcomes. I have given the link to both an easy-to-read version as well as to the Bitcoin blockchain inscription. So let's get to the easy-to-read version. And by the way, if you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey Super Chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. And we are back on Entropy. If some of you could click on this Entropy link, they seem to have enabled now Odyssey streaming on Entropy. I'm very happy about this. It is much better. I like this change because I didn't like sending people to Entropy just to pay for Super Chats. But if you can be at Entropy and watch the show, that becomes a very interesting platform for Super Chats. So click on the link, Entropy Stream, and try the new system. Tell me, am I streaming there? Are you receiving the stream when you click on play? And let me know if there's anything that has to be changed. I will add this link to my description, but I forgot to do it today, so I will add it starting on the show tomorrow. Aquanote says, post-TRP non-DNA life may one day see your inscription and humorously post memes about it 1,000 years from now. That is a possibility, and then hopefully this letter can have some impact. I see Not a Fed already on Entropy. Alimer sends a super chat. He says, not a big reader. Was hoping you were going to read it. Hashtag thanks. Yes, I know that some people appreciate the voice form. And so let's do it. At jfg.world/message-to-humans.txt. Message to Human on Gene Editing by Jean-François Garriépy, PhD. 28th day of March 2023. This is a message for you, human of the future. As of receiving this message, you may have been allowing a third party to modify the genes that you passed on to your own children, to our descendants. I'm here to tell you that you have chosen the wrong path for our species. The goal of this text is to help you understand the errors that were committed along the way. All of these errors could have been readily foreseen and avoided. This text, written in the year 2023, before the events that it describes would happen, stands as proof of that. It may not be too late for you to reverse course. Your immediate action may be crucial in ensuring the continuation of human existence. Genetically editing children at the moment of conception may have seemed obvious and normal to you, your friends, or your ancestors. Perhaps your parents and grandparents all went through the process before conceiving any children they had, including you. Plenty of social incentives must exist in your world that would pressure you into taking this path. Encouragements may have come from your friends, family, or doctors. Some monetary incentives, as well as social and financial ones, may even exist that would push you toward genetic modifications in your world. These outside pressures are, however, only the tip of the iceberg. The case for genetically modifying your children also relies on support located deep inside of you. Although you may not realize it, you have been selected to be attracted to technological enhancements. The reason you are alive today is that your ancestors, one generation after the other, chose to adopt technological developments to enhance themselves, which led them to more successful and productive lives. This eventually helped them outbreed and outcompete the other humans, those who entertained doubts about these technologies. As a survivor of this selection process, you likely bear the genes that make you more likely to succumb to the pressures aforementioned. The first thing you must come to grips with is that you and your ancestors have been engaged in a genocide. You exist today because other people, other human ways of living, have been eradicated from the Earth. For any change that affects human civilization, it is always the case that some other path could have been adopted. Those paths not taken have often been adopted by a fraction of the human population, until the relentless deprivation of resources by the others eventually led to their death, displacement, or reduced reproduction. We could have not discovered fire, in which case we might be primates with larger jaws. We could have not invented engines, in which case we might live more isolated lives. We could have not invented computers, in which case our social lives might still be led in the proximity of others. And indeed, some humans have rejected each of these technologies, only to eventually be replaced by humans who would not reject them. I am not asking you to reject any of these technologies, nor to reject technology as a whole. I'm asking you to consider the possibility that gene editing was a unique technology with unique dangers, existential ones. Gene editing is fundamentally different from all other technologies in that it has struck at the heart of what made us humans. It started slowly chipping at us, one generation after the next, at a time scale that was outside of our ability to care. By the time you read this, it might have become impossible for me to properly communicate what it was like in my time to be human in a way that you would understand, let alone empathize with. I can only hope that you can understand enough of the warnings in this letter in your own way. Faced with an accurate prediction of the calamity you are undergoing, I hope you can choose a different direction for yourself and for humanity going forward. Your ancestors were tempted by technological advances, which in their time provided them with an undeniable advantage over others. It started with good intentions, but too few had the wisdom and will to play the tape to its end. They thought they would free themselves from the cage of the Darwinian processes of nature, only to find out that in building the edifice of their liberation, they had created another cage to imprison themselves in. I would like you to ponder the idea that gene editing fundamentally reverted the Darwinian selection process that had, for millions of years, continuously shaped and improved our ancestors. These processes had made us into a decent, self-sustaining, sexually selected life form. I know well the scientific theory that describes this reversal, because I'm the biologist who came up with it, the theory of phenotypic revolutions. Before we get into it, though, let us review the progression of our understanding of evolution, an understanding which, it could be argued, has led humanity down the road of trying to tweak its own. In 1859, Charles Darwin, in parallel with Alfred Russel Wallace, published the theory of evolution. The theory showed that species share common ancestry. It also described the process by which similar life forms diverge into different ones, a process of accumulation of changes followed by natural selection. In short, the fact that creatures with different characteristics have different chances to survive and reproduce causes them to have various degrees of success at leaving descent in the next generation. The explanatory power of this theory was stunning, although it took decades before it was fully appreciated. The theory gave us an explanation for why living things on planet Earth would have achieved such a degree of diversity. It also provided the key to understanding why living organisms are so functional. They were naturally selected for functionality. Whichever organisms had the characteristics that led them to produce many surviving offsprings were bound to become overrepresented in the next generation, while those that had disadvantageous features were slowly or quickly eliminated across generations. During the 20th century, two parallel streams of research helped us advance our understanding of the consequences of the theory of evolution. One was composed of many evolutionary theorists who put together more precise formulations of the theory: William Donald Hamilton, John Maynard Smith, Robert Trivers, and Richard Dawkins, among others. The other stream came from advances in our understanding of the molecular biological mechanisms by which evolution was made possible, including the discovery of DNA. James Watson, Francis Crick, and Rosalind Franklin, among others. These researchers were fascinated at the possibility of discovering deep truths about ourselves. Unwittingly, however, they were opening a Pandora's box that has unleashed terrible calamities onto mankind. The theory of evolution led to a level of understanding of ourselves that had never been achieved by any species in 4 billion years. Paired with the discovery of the molecular tools that allowed the modification of genes, these discoveries unfortunately came with a temptation. If we can see the process of evolution in such details, why wouldn't we manipulate it and improve it? All that remained was to habituate the population to accept that competing institutions would be allowed to play within the layers of their genetic code. This was accomplished progressively, starting with molecular interference methods, followed in 2020 by mRNA vaccines, eventually culminating with the normalization of DNA-based medical interventions. The precedents for playing with genes were there, after all. Humanity came to dominate planet Earth precisely because we were masters of evolution before we even knew it. Using what we could call our domestication instinct, we shaped anything living under our reach to serve us better: corn, wheat, chicken, pigs, cows, and dogs. We even applied our domestication instincts to ourselves. We selected sexual partners that were a certain way rather than another. In doing so, we farmed ourselves from our initial ape form to our more specific human form. Why wouldn't we want to use technology to do more of that? If you asked me to quickly give you the gist of the theory of phenotypic revolutions, it might go as follows. There is nothing wrong with species who specialize in domestication, so long as they domesticate other things, or if they domesticate themselves through sexual selection. However, things go wrong when such species start engaging in the systematic domestication of their own genome by building databases of their best genes, and when they start printing those enhanced genes into an important part of the population. This kind of domestication, while it may at first glance resemble the two first kinds, establishes a radically different evolutionary regime. It inevitably leads to the demise of those who engage in it. In engaging in this type of domestication, species abandon and delegate control over their genetic evolution to another evolutionary entity. The entity that eventually takes over their evolution turns out to be the very database that they thought was there to improve them. This database takes a life of its own and begins obeying its own evolutionary laws, as it becomes, in turn, the focus of natural selection, to the detriment of the life form that created it. You are not the first life form in the universe to abandon control over your genes to another entity. All life forms, all civilizations, eventually converge toward a phenotypic revolution. Some can choose to pursue or reject it. We know a great deal about how these events unfold because we are the product of a few. While no phenotypic revolution has occurred during the last 4 billion years on planet Earth, such events occurred repeatedly during a tight window of time around the time our planet was born. Every time a life form starts building genetic databases to better produce its offspring and determine their genes, those databases take over the organism and become, in effect, the new genes that henceforth are subjected to natural selection. They become the masters of domestication, of everything that surrounds them. Including the very life forms that led to their existence. It doesn't matter whether the database exists in the computers of a technological civilization that spans an entire planet or in a microscopic cell living somewhere in a pond of water. The outcome is always the same. Our genetic code relies on three layers of molecules: DNA, RNA, and proteins. Before humans engaged in genetic modification, DNA was the carrier of the genes, and the lower layers, RNA and proteins, were doing the chemical work needed to make our bodies function. Each of these layers was the result of a phenotypic revolution in our past, having occurred at the onset of Earth's existence. In each of these cases, what was first a molecular database of good genes for a given life form began evolving toward the domestication of the lower genetic layer. As a life form that engages in genetic editing, you are part of the first species to have reawakened this evolutionary force in the past 4 billion years. You are the first life form to have had the idea of putting together a genetic database other than your own genome in 4 billion years. In short, genes tend to recruit and enslave things around them. They can't help but do that, because those genes that do it inevitably outcompete those genes that don't. That is what happened to the RNA and protein layers of our genetic code. They got domesticated by DNA. And the alarming things you have begun to notice, those things that have started to show up in human civilization around you, are nothing else than the ongoing process of domestication of the human species by another entity. It doesn't matter which form the entity takes that you decided to entrust with your genes. It could be a bunch of expert doctors, it could be a political structure, or it could be, and probably is, a computer. No matter what that thing is in your time that chooses the genes of your children, we will call it the quantome. And this quantome is currently the greatest threat to your existence. It threatens the very continuation of humanity. It is in every good parent's instinct to teach things to their children that they would not let others teach them. At the onset of life, we give plenty of instructions to our children about how to behave in specific situations. Sometimes we would take offense if some other parents were to abruptly instruct our children without our consent, or in ways that we don't like. Yet, by abandoning your genetic evolution to the quantome, you have let an outside entity have much more influence into the lives of your children than they could have had by giving them any amount of verbal instructions. This, perhaps, is the greatest irony of all. If the quantome had come and yelled at our children some elements of corrective discipline, our parental instincts would have immediately kicked in, and we would have protected our children against this aggression. However, we had not evolved to be suspicious of doctors, institutions, and technologies, and the quantome slipped in right through this blind spot to acquire much more control than it should have had. An entity that is good at domestication will always offer early rewards to its target, and the quantome is no exception. It blessed humanity with countless medical advances, eradicating certain diseases for whoever trusted it. Eventually, however, as would be the case for an animal tamer, the rewards provided by the domesticator become rarer and rarer. The domesticated eventually learns that they have been effectively enslaved and that they must subordinate their lives and actions to the interest and success of the domesticator. Given that we know how phenotypic revolutions unfold, I can already make predictions about where the quantome leads humanity. Predictions that you may be able to verify depending on the era in which you read this text. Here are the hallmarks of man's progression toward enslavement and annihilation, which will continue as long as humans engage in the modification of their genes. 1. Early genetic modifications are at first experimental, and they target specific genetic diseases known to be caused by a single gene that can be removed, so-called monogenetic diseases. 2. These early genetic modifications have some degree of success in eradicating simple monogenetic diseases, and an increasing proportion of the population is interested in doing genetic screening before producing offspring in order to benefit from those treatments. 3. Early genetic modifications are accompanied by a certain rate of errors. Accidental mutations, for instance, and medical issues related to the in vitro process of modification and fertilization. However, these technical issues and the occasional horror stories are overlooked. The belief that the method will improve drives the continued use of these techniques, while simultaneously, those predisposed to suffer side effects from these technologies are gently culled. 4. The early genetic modifications offered to patients in reproductive clinics eventually get expanded to a wider array of genetic disorders, numbering in the many hundreds or thousands. This expansion broadens the genetic corrections, which now apply not only to monogenetic disorders, but to risk factors such as cholesterol, blood pressure, diabetes, or other physiological measures believed to be associated with bad health. With the expanding scope of gene modifications, many discoveries are made with respect to the roles of certain genes. A natural experiment occurs around patients choosing or not choosing to modify specific genes. It turns out that genes we were initially modifying for a given reason have multiple surprising effects in the body. Some genes targeted at first for fixing A also fix B. Some genes targeted at first for fixing C also disrupt D. 6. Accidental evolutionary effects begin to occur in which unintended changes, both positive and negative, show up in the cohorts of genetically modified children. Instead of merely improving their health, genetic modifications have extreme impacts on their social abilities, their performance on the employment market, their sexual desirability, as well as other measures of human success. 7. Many adjustments are made to early recommendations for gene editing, keeping only those whose positive effects are estimated to counterbalance any negative effects by a wide margin. 8. Genetic modifications, which initially interested mostly would-be parents who suffered from specific genetic disorders, eventually charm most parents who are interested in securing advantages for their children. Arguments in support of equal access to genetic modifications as a human right to correct the injustices of nature and achieve equity grow in popularity. 9. While the genetic modifications may have initially been providing only slight advantages, it eventually becomes clear that children modified genetically are outperforming others. Specifically, they eventually go on to lead more successful lives and produce more offspring. These children dominate others on various scales of desirability in partner selection. 10. The proportion of couples using genetic modification technology reaches a majority, and eventually a supermajority. Only a small percentage of the population develops a culture of resistance against genetic modifications. 11. The genetic modification of children is increasingly recognized as a humanitarian matter, and it is common in genetically modified circles to look at people who chose not to modify their children as backward and misinformed. People who do not modify their children genetically are looked at as stubborn unfits of the communities in which they live. 12. Psychological and behavioral modifications, which were at first only accidental and non-intentional, become the subject of intentional decision-making. Certain genes known to be associated with antisocial or criminal behaviors are rejected by parents and printed out of existence. They are replaced by pro-social versions. 13. As the definitions of psychiatric disorders are expanded to include various forms of social incompatibilities with the community, the number of genes intentionally modified for controlling the psychology of individuals increases. The concept of a psychiatric disorder is stretched until it encompasses any characteristic that a community may want to get rid of. For instance, genes are promoted for improved attention in education, reduced verbal aggression, or improved worker abilities. 14. Struggles for existence emerge. These struggles may at times take the form of a war, or at other times, simple competition for resources. These conflicts oppose the supermajority who have accepted genetic modifications and the minority resisting them. 15. In these struggles, the societies performing the most genetic modifications are systematically better fit to exclude the renegades. Eventually, only isolated places of Earth for which little interest exists can be turned into homes for the non-genetically modified. 16. The increased reliance of humanity on medical procedures to produce offspring leads to a loss of natural fertility in the human population. Natural conception becomes near impossible and eventually impossible. It is considered undesirable anyway, since by creating a natural baby, one would miss one round of updates on the newest genetic recommendations. 17. Homosexual couples eventually become capable of producing children. Children conceived from up to 46 parents also become possible through special mixing of chromosomes outside of the meiotic norm of binary sex. Children produced from more than 46 parents also become possible later, using crossover techniques on partial chromosomes. 18. Sexual selection disappears. The medical process providing updated recommendations for genes has simply outcompeted the informal process by which men and women use to gauge each other's genetic quality, such as beauty, attraction, and measures of cognitive performance. 19. It is eventually realized that so much more of the human phenotype was dependent on sexual selection than we originally thought. Much of our intelligence, creativity, ingenuity, and many more of our features were ultimately only needed to signal our genetic quality to potential partners. In the absence of a strong evolutionary pressure for the maintenance of those features, they disappear progressively. Only the intelligence levels absolutely necessary to maintain functional societies remain, which turn out to be quite low. A host of other human features disappear also as they turn out to be superfluous in the societies planned by the Quantum. Most of what we once thought of as human turns out to be a gigantic peacock tail. In other words, these human features existed merely as displays meant to impress potential partners and signal our genetic quality. In the absence of selection for these features, they disappear. 20. Different systems of genetic editing emerge in different cultures. These differences exist at various levels, from methods aimed at preserving family-specific genetic heritage to nationwide preferences for certain genes over others. A distinction in competition emerges between the various factions of humanity who have different policies for gene editing. A struggle for existence ensues between these factions, which exist in addition to the struggle for existence against any remaining portion of the population that has refused genetic editing. Humans produced by a specific quantum become solidary and act in concert, like ants, sometimes in a self-sacrificial manner, in order to ensure the continuation of their society and their quantum. 21. At some point along this progression, quantums begin to reproduce. The operation begins as a simple transfer of the genetic information from certain groups to others in order to share the developments of their genetic databases. Eventually, these acts of reproduction become more specific, as a quantum makes copies of itself to invade new territories and take over the editing of new subsections of humanity. 22. A struggle for existence emerges between the various quantum copies. The various genetic databases documenting how to establish a colony of sterile humans. In this struggle, the quantums that encode the most enslaved and sycophantic humans, willing to sacrifice their own lives to the interest of their quantum, end up outcompeting those quantums that produce more classical human forms. 23. The quantums that reduce the human machine to its bare minimum into a mere tool for the quantum's success and survival end up outliving the softer quantums. These most aggressive quantums dominate the planet to the exclusion of looser human societies. If any non-genetically modified humans survive this epoch, it will be as renegades, regarded largely as viruses by the societies of sterile humans under the command of a quantum. These viruses will be combated by the immune systems of the quantum-based colonies. 24. Eventually, nothing is left of human civilization. The last creatures that one could call human or human-like eventually get replaced by the quantums that have opted for more efficient tools in their reproduction. From the perspective of a species engaged in survival and sexual selection, the human machine was a wonder. But from the perspective of a quantum trying to optimize its reproductive rate, it was quite wasteful. 25. The quantum goes on to outlive humans, forming the fourth genetic layer of the genetic code, a layer composed of bits encoded in a computer that optimize the production of DNA, RNA, and protein tools. The quantum evolves, survives, and reproduces. It produces organisms that serve its own reproductive benefits. Traces of humanity only remain in the fragments of DNA that it left for the quantum to recycle in its own ways. The phenotypic revolution initiated by human civilization, which you are taking part in, is certain to lead to our destruction. The lesson I've learned from the phenotypic revolution that occurred 4 billion years prior is that the life forms who participate to the process end up being outcompeted by the gene databases they create. Once upon a time, DNA was merely such a database for another life form that pre-existed us. These gene databases simply have too much control on the offspring of the next generation. They always end up using this control to place themselves at the center of the evolutionary process. That is how DNA came to be at the center of almost all life, on Earth up to now. By trusting a gene database to determine the genetic constitution of your children, you are giving away life and control to another entity, which will lead this entity to domesticate what it can, in this case, your children. The process of a phenotypic revolution is even more alarming than a simple case of outbreeding or outcompetition. It is one thing for a life form to disappear because it was unfit for the world in which it found itself. It is another thing for this life form to willfully give up its liberty, its creativity, and to allow its fragments to be recuperated by another entity that it has itself birthed. Slavery was bad, but choosing genetic slavery for all of your descendants going forward is worse. I understand that it may all seem unreal to you. How could it be that this progression was known to a man in 2023 and that yet humanity still carelessly took this course? There are many reasons, but most importantly, you were lied to. You were lied to by people who obfuscated the ability of their mind to think in the long term. You were lied to by people who had monetary incentives to do so. The best part of you, the caring parent, was exploited by people who wanted to benefit from it while condemning your line of descent to slavery. These people spoke in technical language, telling you that the genetic techniques were safe and effective at resolving certain diseases, but they said nothing about the evolutionary consequences of the game they were playing. Their brains had evolved not to care for the benefits of humanity in the long run, and they knew your brains had not evolved for that either. Evolution had turned their sight to the proximal gains they could obtain by recruiting you into their worldwide experiment. In addition to the deceptive push for expanding the use of genetic technologies, it is also the case that the quality of the arguments resisting this push at times suffered. Perhaps a net was cast too wide by some elements of the human population in resisting against any and all technologies. Let me be clear here. It is not computers nor artificial intelligence as a whole that caused our demise. It is our relationship with them. Had we limited the contribution of those entities to other aspects of our lives, we would have had no problem weeding out the good from the bad. But the minute we let machines play with our genes, we have accepted that our very conception of good and bad would be dictated by them. What should we do? How do we restore an environment in which a rich and diverse human existence can flourish? The solution is quite simple. No matter the step at which you find yourself along the phenotypic revolution that I just described, all humans must convene and agree to stop the genetic editing of children. They must agree to do so with the understanding that it is better to protect human existence as a whole than to succumb to the individual improvements or reductions in harms that could be potentially obtained from using these methods. Humanity must choose existence over comfort. There is no place for exceptions. There is no horror that nature can throw at us that is worse than the horrors we could create by trying to fix them. If you understand your situation well enough, you might realize just how seemingly unsurmountable the challenge before you is. Trusting in yourself and nature over the safe, predictable mutations offered to you may seem, in the short term, like it puts you at a disadvantage. However, the offering before you is poisoned. The only choice that can save your descendants from being reduced to servile drones for another entity is to trust in yourself and the random assortment of genes operating through natural sex. You may experience the positive feelings of parenthood when giving birth to genetically modified children, but those positive feelings were meant by nature to be triggered by the birth of your biological children, not the composite products of your association with a machine. The seemingly insurmountable odds before you, as you consider joining the resistance against genetic modifications, are faced by every life form to have ever existed, as they ponder their minuscule chances of survival on a long enough timescale. The odds that you would beat evolution and come out on top are tiny, no doubt. However, abdicating that opportunity in the pursuit of the alternative is a guaranteed path to failure. Again and again, your ancestors overcame these seemingly insurmountable odds in surviving the challenges of their time, and they have succeeded down the line at creating you. The most important thing I must tell you is that the future is set only by the present and the past, and that you are therefore capable of changing the course of evolution going forward. If it is the case that humans can choose so much of their own attributes, then they can certainly choose to forego this capricious opportunity to determine their descendants' future. We can and must choose not to choose. We must do so together. This decision must not be made out of carelessness for the outcome of mankind's evolution, but out of a recognition that the mechanisms of nature are better guides than the minds of men in reaching our desired outcomes. Humans must accept and embrace existence as a sexual, evolutionary species. This existence comes with hardships, waste, and uncertainties. We must understand that this sexual race forward made up most of who we were. The only alternative to this imperfect existence is an even more imperfect existence as sterile drones for a centrally controlled entity that shares the evolutionary scheme of ant colonies. Either the human genome continues to evolve or the quantum does in our place. There is no possibility in between. This is the struggle for existence that should fuel each of your decisions going forward. Written on the 28th day of March 2023 by Jean-François Garrier, PhD, author of The Revolutionary Phenotype, The Amazing Story of How Life Begins and How It Ends. My Twitter account. I thank first reader Fadam for helpful suggestions and editing, and I thank James Babcock for editing and proposing ideas that made it into the text. This text is published as an ordinal on the Bitcoin blockchain, with a polite request to carry this text as far into the future as humanly possible. And that is it. That is my text. That is what I had to express to eternity and to the human civilizations that will follow us. I hope that they get to experience the fact of being shocked by, because no matter how much the genetically modified win in the coming years and in the coming thousands of years, the fact that I was there to say it in advance, I think, will matter a lot. I think that if there were people who, when there is deception happening in society, and someone called that deception in advance and said, this is what they're going to say, this is what they're going to do, I think it provides a stronger argument that we should have known. We should have known that this would happen because JF knew. So Mosey is crying. He is expressing tears on the chat. Not a Fed has sent a super chat on Entropy. He says, I am paying to send you some text. Well, thank you so much. And it's good to see that Entropy is working. Unfortunately, I haven't prepared my display. Normally, I can display the Entropy chats, but today I can't. So normally I can show them on screen, not a Fed. But unfortunately, today I was just surprised that Entropy had done this work, so I wasn't ready to prepare it. Lix Megumins says, Dear Jeff, how can we convince the libs to turn themselves into tubes while we wait it out until we can just switch off the master computer? There is such a question around when is the best time to fight to death? There is a good question there, and I have no solution and no answer. But it's a good question. Like, are there momentum that you can acquire in a phenotypic revolution where you let your enemies do the error, and then you show them how wrong they were, and you outcompete them? Perhaps this is something that will come to be a strategic military considerations as the phenotypic revolution begins. Mark D sends a super chat. He says, Thanks, JF. This needs to be made into the scariest movie ever. Am I right in assuming that your letter is now immutable, protected by the BTC blockchain, to remain a part of it forever, not subject to censorship or modification? P.S. Safe and effective. Right, we've heard that lie before. Yeah, that was a little reference to a modern lie, safe and effective for the vaccine. But yeah, that's what I was referring to. Now, you are absolutely correct. My understanding is that these files that are added to the Bitcoin blockchain are immutable and they are stuck in the stack of hash. So you could not know where the money of the wallets are at this block if you don't integrate these letters to the blockchain. So my understanding, and it's based on someone who was frustrated at Ordinals, and it was saying, make them prunable, make them prunable. Prunable would mean that we would allow miners to quickly identify this spot of text and kick it out. But my understanding is that the Bitcoin blockchain decided to go against this prunable strategy, like many other blockchains have been making it prunable. And they have decided that the whole text would be integrated to the blockchain. But that is just my understanding from the outside. I don't know the details. What I know is that publishing this letter, which is 30 kilobytes, costed me $55 USD worth of Bitcoin. So it's the cost, and I'm super happy to pay it. I don't care. But people in the future might laugh their ass off, because people in the future might see this amount of Bitcoin as being worth billions. So I don't know when, but people are going to be like, what? He threw 0.002 Bitcoins on this shit? Yeah, baby. Papa JF, provider of memes. Frog Eyes says, I feel like TRP movies already exist. Presumably it's the machines looking after human reproduction in movies like Matrix and Wall-E. Yeah, but a true movie that gets into the true replicator tango hasn't been done yet. I'm sure it will be done sometime. So that is it. That is it. Spread this letter. Go out there on the internet. Cause discussions about it, because the earliest we intervene with this, the more easy it is to win the war against the revolutionary phenotype. Don't let this go. You are my soldiers of the internet, and you guys will be remembered as the first fellows of the resistance, really. I'm not even kidding. Like, I'm not even saying this to prop you up or to make you feel like you're part of something. Really, like, there's 100 people watching live. There's going to be maybe 1,000, 1,500 watching the next day through offline, and maybe a couple hundreds on MP3. You guys are around me in the first days of this resistance, and you guys are aware of the danger of genetic modifications when most people aren't. So you do whatever you want to invest as an effort, and that you're willing to invest, whatever surplus of time you have in your life, go out there and help me spread this letter. And you always have the link that I gave on my tweet. You always have the proof that it is on the blockchain and the ability for anyone to copy-paste this series of text and put it in a notepad, and you can make your own documents from it. I give you the permission to do whatever you like with the letter, as long as you do it for free, not in a way to exploit it or exploit others. I'm fine with you distributing it for educating and spreading. Barnabé Buto says, do we have to pay you to publish it in our wallets? You were discussing about a fee a few weeks ago. Well, now that I've gone through it, let me tell you, I don't have the option of doing what I wanted to do before. I wanted to, because Ariel Suarez had mentioned he wanted to buy one. I can't sell them at $20. It cost me $55 to produce them. So if I do another copy of this, it's another $55. Are we free to publish it in our wallets? You can make one. It's not going to be a JF official one, and it's not going to have been numbered by me. I'm going to get to your super chat. Go away. Sorry, I'm getting to it. But so because I allow people to republish it, you can. You could take a copy-paste of that letter, put it in your own wallet, and you would have it there. But it won't be an official JF letter. You won't have paid Papa JF for it. If one day there is demand for it, I could sell NFT copies of it. But I would have to charge you $55 to begin. And then I would have to take my profit. So I think we're headed for $70, $90, you know. But I could do it, and we could have a system of numbers, and you could reserve your number. And I could guarantee you that I'm going to send you the number of letter if you send me the BTC. That could be how it works. Silver Spider says, yeah, sure, JF. Right after I convince anyone I know that Dems are the real racists and it's the culture is total crap, maybe I can get started on warning them about gene editing and that they're all super excited about. Yeah, well, we'll get there. We'll get there. Go away was saying, thanks, JF. You've just given the AI all the motivation it needs to destroy the Bitcoin blockchain. Now my great-great-grandchildren will not only be slaves to the AI, they will be poor too. Awesome. Cheers. I work with the assumption that the Bitcoin blockchain is the least entropic, not least entropic. It is the higher entropy media available to pass a message the furthest possible in the future in 2023. I don't know anything else that has a shot at surviving a million years. The Bitcoin blockchain does. It does because whatever happens to Bitcoin, there will be one fan somewhere storing it. And it's going to be ridiculous. It's going to be on a single USB stick by then, I guess. Whatever happens to it, even if it was to be replaced by something else, someone would preserve it as an artifact of internet culture. And therefore, I think that I've chosen the best option here. Stephen Robinson says, JF, have you published this letter as a Twitter thread? I mean, I don't know if I could because it is long. How many tweets would that be? I mean, I can try seeing if I'll do it. But for now, I want people to meme around the tweet that I've done and the links to the ordinal itself. I want people to realize before they consume it on Twitter as a regular tweet passing by their feed, I want them to understand it's out there on the internet and you can go get it at any time in the future, even when I'm dead. That is very significant. I mean, it's very rare that you do something on a given day that is there forever, and this is as close as it gets. All right, so we have a shooting to talk about. So there was a trans shooter, and there was a very poor handling of this case because it seems that although we haven't seen the manifesto yet, I'm waiting for the manifesto to come out. Let me tell you guys that if the manifesto becomes publicly available, I will certainly do a psychological profile of this individual. This individual who came into a Christian school, shot 3 adults to death and 3 children. I have reviewed the body cam video. Here's the body cam video. I'm not going to show it on screen, though, because there is the moment of the death, but for those who want to consult it for archival purposes, it is there on YouTube. And what we see on the video is very competent police work. The police gets quick into the school. They sweep all of the rooms that they can. They sweep the whole first floor. They find out eventually that the shooter is on the second floor of the school. They start hearing gunshots. And then they approach through the hall. And one of the police who has a high precision, assault rifle, if you want to call it that way, you know, kind of AR-15, but with additions and a scope and everything. He seems to be in the perfect angle as he moves toward the left. He gets the angle on the shooter, and at this point, there are three or four policemen that are lined up to his right, and they know that they have to stay behind because this elite shooter, or the best shooter they could have, I guess, is there, trying to get the shot in, and very quickly gets the angle and says, "Reloading, reloading." And I believe that he had visually assessed that this was the moment at which the shooter was reloading. So they were trained to know it's when the shooter is reloading, that's your best bet to go shoot them because they're occupied. They can't really shoot back. So we find ourselves with the shooter being there, and the shooter had destroyed the glasses of the second floor, apparently was perhaps trying to place himself for rooftop shooting type of activities. But as soon as the police gets him in his sight, shoots him, the shooter falls on the ground. And eventually the shooter falls on the ground, hidden behind some kind of chair. But the other police then come with smaller guns, and they're like, "Don't reach for the gun, don't reach for the gun." At this point, the shooter has already been neutralized, but perhaps out of fear that he may be reaching for the gun, he or she, so I don't care really, the shooter may be reaching for the gun, so they shoot a lot of other bullets into the shooter as they are probably already dead or on their way to die. DK Shadow says, "Yep, the shooter wanted a standoff." So that is what I retain from the body cam video. I retain police work that has probably received training not to repeat the errors of Uvalde, because they do exactly the opposite of Uvalde. They don't retract, withdraw, be careful. They have a whole system where one of the three police sweeps, and then one other takes the front, and then he sweeps some back of the door space, and then someone else take up the front. There's always a sweeper at the front who's kind of the first to explore a space for safety. So excellent training on the police and excellent work. Very risky work, of course, because we had an individual who was determined in creating as much damage as they could. But in the end, after the police work, the shooter was neutralized. And now we have a manifesto that they said they have found in the car. Will they release it? Will they have the policy that releasing manifestos creates too much interest for the shooter? I don't know. But in any case, if there is a manifesto, I'm making a psychological profile on a future show. Meanwhile, David Pakman is stuck in perhaps the greatest scandal in terms of the media reaction to this shooting. David Pakman had done a very dishonorable tweet initially. That was yesterday. He said, "Very surprising that there would be a mass shooting at a Christian school, given that lack of prayer is often blamed for these horrible events. Is it possible they weren't praying enough or correctly, despite being a Christian school?" That is disgusting, and you know, it's very weird to be making this kind of loose, low-level, sarcastic gotchas, like atheistic gotchas, on the tomb of six people as we just learned that they had died, you know, and six people who were at a Christian school. So, but I know what he was trying to do. The Democrats have been coordinating on this shooting to bring the idea that, and they've been coordinating before, that this whole saying around prayers aren't enough. If you dare say prayers, you better vote for the Second Amendment to be abolished. They've been doing this for many shootings already. So David Pakman was trying to give his own take on the whole prayers aren't enough argument of gun control. But it seems that he has spoken more than he expected. It seems that his spite for Christianity and his lack of respect for Christians ended up showing into his own spin of that Democrat argument. Now, he deleted this tweet. But as he deleted this tweet, he tweeted something else. All right, too many anti-Semitic attacks and threats to my family. I've deleted the tweet. And now he's deleted this other tweet because it's like, how can you turn a day of shooting, a day of terroristic anti-Christian shooting in America, how can you be trying to turn this into these damn anti-Semites are after me? How narcissistic do you have to be to consider that people pointing out to the fact that you're Jewish and that it's extreme, it's a bad position to be a Jew, to be mocking Christians that are dying? That's a bad position to be. And not only this, but in the process of deleting your tweet, the only thing that crosses your mind is not the suffering of the families or, you know, perhaps what I've said was has hurt some Christians out there that are part of the families who are suffering from losing their loved ones. But what you think, what crosses your mind is, I'm a victim. These damn anti-Semites, they're everywhere. Now, David Pakman has now deleted the second tweet in which he was announcing that he was deleting his first tweet and was complaining about anti-Semitism against him as he was mocking Christians as part of his commentary regarding the anti-Christian terrorist shooting in Nashville. Confusing, but that is what happened today. That is my take. And Andrew Wilson was pretty pissed, seemed downright gleeful that Christians were getting shot, didn't he? That is what was on people's mind today. David Pakman handling this thing extremely poorly. Meanwhile, females continue being females.
I wonder if the parents of the victims of the Nashville shooting today would still have their children if these trans bills in Tennessee were never a thing. I'm not a parent, but if I were, I'd be real, real mad at the government. I'd be real, real mad at the government.
So we have basically into our feminine contingent of American citizenry a bunch of fucking terrorists who, like they see a bunch of kids dying and the first thing they think is, maybe I could use this as leverage to push parents to be more trans inclusive, because ultimately they got what they deserve, right? I mean, people are too oppressive of trans, and so it's normal that trans are going out there to kill people because they're frustrated. It is what she is saying. And if I was saying that kind of thing about, say, white people, I'd be in jail already. Can you imagine me back in the days of those white supremacist shooting? Can you imagine me saying what she's saying there? Maybe there would be something you can change in your behavior, yeah? With my boobs in the air. I mean, I would be in jail. I wouldn't be here tonight. It's amazing that we let a woman do so much. Frank Da Silva has shared a tweet with me showing he has retweeted an event in Vancouver, Canada. I cannot show it on screen, but there is a guy who just takes a knife and he starts killing another man in broad daylight in front of his children, his child and his wife. And so it appears that this all started in a restaurant, and the white guy who gets killed, who gets stabbed, he told this guy, please don't smoke around my daughter, or something like this. And the guy is just happens to be a psycho with a knife, and he pulls a knife and just kills him. And he plants the knife throughout all of his belly. The man falls flat onto his face eventually, bleeds so much. I mean, there must have been many knives hit to create that much bleeding that fast. But we see, we hear the child in horror screaming, and we hear what seems to be perhaps the voice of his wife. It's horrible. It's horrible, the city life. You cannot look for trouble like this. You cannot ask someone, hey, please don't do this, or could you respect me there? Or it's like surviving in the city, your goal should be to exit the city. That's all you can do at this point without being targeted by violence. And this is a video that I had for a couple of days, but I always forget to show it on the show. It's this amazing, the tire of this pickup truck. This pickup truck is an irresponsible individual, okay? Why are you installing those gigantic tires? Those gigantic tires are so gigantic that they're dangerous. Now, what you're going to see is the tire will loosen itself. It will pass under this car. This car will be propelled like a rocket. Flipping totally. Look at this. Let's make sure that I don't ear rape you. Whoa! Unbelievable, the energy in a tire. I would have thought that the tire would fold, would crumble. But somehow, the energy of the tire, enough to spin the car in a way, and perhaps the constraints on friction of the car onto the road. How do you get a single tire, a rubber tire, to eject a vehicle like this? Well, it seems that it can happen. Millennials dominate insolvencies in Canada as credit cards, student loan, and other debts pile up. The millennials, their Canadian counterparts, are leading the way when it comes to insolvencies, according to Ontario-based insolvencies trustee firm OYES Michaelis. Not going very well for a generation of young Canadians like people my age and younger. This is the shooter. This is the shooter identified by Andy No. Audrey Hall, who uses he, him pronouns, is identified as the armed militant who shot up a Christian school in Nashville, killing 3 children and 3 staff. The shooting follows trans activists making death threats over Tennessee banning minors' medical transitioning. So it's this whole revolution of like gender ideology, and the fact that they are frustrated. Some of these people, some of the extremists there, are frustrated that they won't have this method to get into the youth, to get into the next generation going forward in certain American states. This woman is a little crazy, and I don't want to play the whole thing because it's 2 minutes and she's a witch and she's insane. But she had a good point. She had a good point that perhaps there is some degree of a causal effect here of child molestation onto this person. Now, what she identifies, what this girl identifies, is that this Christian school apparently was known for a known person in the community that would have committed some child molestation at this school, and that it would happen to be the very same time at which this trans shooter was, because this trend shooter today was 28 years old, but they were at that school years ago. But it seems that it's the same window of time that they were at the school where you would have had those events that came to be publicly known to be a child molestation at this school. So it's an interesting theory that part of the vengeance against this specific school could have been motivated by some sort of child diddling. But we don't have more evidence than this. I would wait for the journal, the manifesto of the person to confirm or to cancel. Ethics Committee approves new lobbying rules that will legalize bribery, says Canadian Citizen Groups. Changes are coming to Canada's lobbying rules, and a coalition of citizen groups say they will legalize bribery by allowing for favor trading between lobbyists and politicians. The House Ethics Committee has approved a proposed revision of the lobbyist code of conduct, by and large only making a few recommendations for changes. It's shameful that the Liberal, Conservative, and Bloc MPs have decided to support changes that will gut key ethical lobbying rules. So it seems there will be more access for those corporations that want to push certain political talking points. In the U.S., there are rules, but you guys can give a lot of money to someone's campaign through your super PACs. But in Canada, it's very different. In Canada, the channel from corporations to politicians must be very secretive, very limited, very indirect. Corporations don't have the ability to send as much as you guys do in the U.S., where hundreds of millions and billions can, you know, someone like SBF can total across all of his channels and indirect ways, can total in the billions of donations. You can't do that in Canada, although they have ways to do smaller amounts. Go Away says, JF, I don't think the shooting was related to the abuse, as the abuse seems to have taken place in the homes of one of the pastors who was targeted at vulnerable kids. However, it was strange how the police chief kept saying that no one was specifically targeted in the shooting. Strange. Yeah, I don't know. Thanks for letting me know. Very good to know. I really don't know. So it's all speculation at this moment. Substack asks writers for money as VC funding freezes. Substack is initiating a crowdsourcing funding round, allowing writers to invest as little as $100 in the company. I've got this email because when I went to the Richard Spencer interview, he published it on Substack, and somehow by putting me as a guest on his show, Substack started sending me emails saying you have to create an account, and I created an account just so that people would see my picture and my name, but I don't write at Substack. I write on the Bitcoin blockchain. I'm a fucking Chad. But perhaps one day I'll write at Substack. But it seems that they are needing this flow of money. Like a lot of technological companies, they are too trained on artificial flows of money, startup money, venture capital money. And they fail when it comes down to the bottom line of true interest, true consumer interest in your product. Go Away says, Jeff, I don't... okay, this one I read. T.S. Apostolos says, did you see the text she sent to a friend 15 minutes before the attack? Yes, it doesn't give much insight. But she sent to a friend a text that says, I'm about to go do something horrible. It's just the only solution. I really have to die. You're going to hear about it on the news. And I'm sorry, but I had to do it. It's the only choice forward. I'm paraphrasing here based on my remembering of the reading. And then she ends with, I love you. You are the most beautiful person that I have known on this earth. Something like this. So I don't know. Does that indicate some kind of romantic relationship? Does that indicate that this person maybe was particularly open at the moment of her coming out with respect to her trans identity? All of this could be the case. I don't know what it means. I would like to see the manifesto so that I can work better on what this message means. Who was she in relation to this friend? Because they can say friend, but was this a friend with whom you've had sex? Was this a friend that accepted your transition and supported you through it? What is it? Jamie Dimon in hot seat as sworn deposition looms in Epstein lawsuits. So Jamie Dimon from JP Morgan, perhaps getting in trouble right now. For what? For exposing his knowledge of this? But I don't know. It seems to me that what's the matter here? Maybe in a civil lawsuit, they can get at him and just try to soil his reputation. But it seems to me that you don't have a responsibility to denunciate crimes that you're not sure are even happening. You cannot be forced to testify. You cannot be forced to make a police report. There are certain circumstances where inaction can mount to the degree of negligence. But when it's a distant knowledge that perhaps something is happening, you don't have a negligence obligation to report. So I don't know what they want from him. Bombshell vax analysis finds $147 billion in economic damage, tens of millions injured or disabled. Estimated 2022 U.S. vaccine damage report, 26.6 million injuries, 1.36 million disabilities, 300,000 excess deaths. So estimated economic cost, $147 billion. $147 billion. What a psyop this whole thing was. What the fuck led society to go so insane about all this? Unbelievable. But I'm happy that it's getting quantified in some reasonable way. I was retweeting someone. Unfortunately, he probably blocked me as a result of my retweet. But I was saying the Ukraine flag people who dominated Twitter under shadow banning of everyone else are migrating back to Tumblr. Because this old guy had his Ukraine flag on his bio and he was like, well, I'm leaving back to Tumblr. And I couldn't believe it. Like it was always almost like a meme how, holy shit, they're really going to try to go back to Tumblr? I didn't even know Tumblr still existed. It was awesome, but it was not a meme. I think he was really frustrated at the new environment where people can speak freely. So that is what motivated him to want to have a solution out of Twitter. And a lot of the blue check marks are getting extremely pissed right now because 3 days, and the blue check marks are losing their legacy status. It's going to be so awesome. They're going to get trolled. They're going to get laughed at. And Elon, this is surprising to me. Elon is going to limit the For You tab, the main tab on which everyone lands on Twitter, except if you're like me and you've clicked away from it, because I'm always on the Following tab. I want to get news about everyone I follow. Any of you guys, I want to see what you tweet about. I want to see what you retweet because I want the sponge effect of having a relationship with the public. But Elon Musk is about to make it so that the For You tab, which is what most normies use, you're going to have the blue check mark to be on there. Basically, the other accounts don't exist for the For You tab anymore, starting on April 15. But Elon Musk has preempted the idea that perhaps some leftists will want the blue check mark. but they won't want this blue check mark to be displayed on their bio because it's going to be a sign of hate. It's going to be a sign of I support Elon Musk. So Elon Musk has been working in the background on an option for leftists to be able to hide their blue check mark, but they can still benefit from the privilege, the privileges of the blue check mark, but they're going to be able to remove it as a political statement that, like, I don't support Elon. That is amazing. That is amazing. I find it sad that there will be people basically secretly benefiting from advantages that you're not going to be able to know who's benefiting from them. But at least if you see them on the For You tab, you're going to know that they have a secret blue check that is simply not showing up because they hate Elon. Hilarious what's happening. And as a last news item, a regional banks target new crypto business from former Signature and Silvergate clients. There's no shortage of banks currently rolling out the welcome mat for crypto firms who need accessing to banking after the blow-up of popular crypto banks, Silvergate and Signature Bank. But I do hope that the bank sector gets more welcoming to, because it's still hard. When I introduce my friends to Bitcoin, it's still hard to find a path for clear money transfer that would go fast, that would not be that you don't have to call the bank and be like, please unblock my transfer. It was intentional. It's so sad that it's that way because it shouldn't be like banks. What the fuck? You're supposed to we're supposed to do what we want with this money. We want to buy Bitcoin. How do we do this? Maybe there could be an interface at the bank that says, if you want to buy Bitcoin, tell us in advance. And then I would click the checkbox and it's like, leave me alone. Yes, those sending of money that I do, I want to do them. I'm not a fraudster. I want to buy Bitcoin. And then I click the checkbox. That would be great. They would leave me alone. But we don't have this. Right now we have general hostility. That is it for tonight, boys. Spread the letter to humans. Save humanity. The existence of DNA-based humans lies on your shoulder.